This is a special away episode where another podcaster will tell us a story of a murder that took place out with Scotland, of either a Scottish victim or a Scottish murderer. And on this episode, we have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Effie from the fantastic Mum's Mysteries and Murder podcast. But before we hear from Effie, first I'd love to give a huge thank you to our newest Patreon member. Kelly, we can't thank you enough for becoming one of our wonderful Patreon members. Thank you for your support. Thank you also to our existing Patreon members for your ongoing support. We appreciate you so much. Thank you, Misty Dawn, Alexandria, Julian, and Lady of Innerwick Castle. Now, just before we hear Effie's story, here's a promo for Missing Magnolias, one of the newest podcasts to join the Darkcast Network.
Every raindrop reflecting on the water as the sun shuts her eyes. Don't know why.
Hey there, we are Missing Magnolias. We are a local Louisiana true crime podcast. I'm Scarlett, your everyday true crime consumer. My co-host, Dr. Michelle Janice, is a criminologist who specializes in missing persons cases.
Most offenders don't pose, and even most serial killers don't pose their victims. And we could go down the rabbit hole with the crucifixion thing.
Together, we walk you through a journey of unique curation of interviews with victims, criminologists, experts, and truth seekers who begin the dialogue, what is the real true crime experience?
We didn't find out till we were 11 or 12 years old that our mom was murdered.
Just because someone's gay doesn't mean they can't commit a hate crime against a gay person.
We share stories of the families of the missing and murdered.
In Times Square, it was so cool. It said Mickey Schunick fought for her life.
It's a real privilege for us to speak to professionals and experts. People who are boots on the ground and truly have their fingers on the pulse of what's happening in our society.
Seeing a 16-year-old commit suicide and there was no one there to clean it up for the mother, I put together the company a few years later.
Homeless women are a representation of all of us. They're not one kind of person. They have individual stories.
Vanessa Guillen and Gregory Weedle Morales weren't AWOL. They were buried in a shallow grave outside the base.
We all need a little levity, and as we all know, true crime can be heavy. Our minisodes are a break in our usual content.
Are you out and proud? Do you hide your sex doll? What if your parents come visit? Where does it go?
Too often we sensationalize the offender and undermine the victim.
Why don't give them such snazzy names? I feel like he should be like Tiny Dick Terry.
It's not often that you get to help set the course of history straight.
You know, they're ordinary people, but she is referred to as Methelina, Cleopatra, Lorelei, the Siren of the Swamp. Well, she's none of the above.
If you like what you hear, go subscribe to Missing Magnolias now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the podcast, Effie.
Yay! Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for asking me to do a little story. It's so exciting.
It is. It's exciting for me. I've never been in this position before.
You can sit back and relax.
I can.
Yes.
It's weird. No research to do.
Have you looked at this case? Because we sort of shared notes on what we would be doing.
I didn't, other than I know the names of the murderer and the victims and where it happened and where they were from. But I haven't done anything else. It's just really strange.
Oh, lovely.
I deliberately wanted to be told the story for a change.
Oh, it's so nice doing that. Because so with the podcast that I do, Mum's Mysteries and Murders, it's myself and Marty. So we take turns each time around. And we try not to tell the other person what it is. And it's lovely to hear, like, the reaction of the person. And they're kind of, and you know, the questions that they ask. And you're kind of like, yeah, I would be doing that too. So it's lovely just to sit back and listen.
Okay, well, I'll try and relax.
Yes, so this one isn't the nicest, I would say. So with the podcast that I do, we do like a mix of kind of historical things and kind of newer ones, and like Marty's done some quite sort of gruesome ones as well. So this one is particularly disturbing, I would say.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to skim over some of the horrible stuff because I don't really like
going into too much detail.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, what I am covering today is the murders of Chantelle Rose and Andrew Rowe, and the murderer was Jason Downey. So the sources that I've used for this are The Scotsman, BBC News, a documentary called Jason Downey, Crimes That Shook Australia, ABC News, Herald Scotland, and Dr. Grande, who's on YouTube. I don't know if you've heard of him, but oh my goodness, I love his YouTube channel. It's brilliant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you need to go and check it out because he's like actually like a counsellor by trade. So he covers murders and crimes and also kind of topical things that have happened. So he takes you through what's happened, and then he does a little bit of analysis on like why he thinks it's happened, which I just find fascinating. I think the thing that, like, I don't know about you, Dawn, but the thing that really draws me into true crime stuff is kind of like, why would you do that? You know, like, what made them turn into these awful kind of murderers? And, you know, like, what's the history behind them? What's the background? Are you like that as well?
No, see, I'm not.
So what kind of interests you? Is it just you like the sort of story behind it?
Yeah, I like hearing about the victim. I like finding out about them. Yeah.
Do you?
I don't want to know why they did it. I'm not so much interested in them, the murderer.
Okay.
Who's getting murdered and what were they like? That's what I kind of like.
See, that's such a nice take on it, isn't it? Because that's what we should be thinking.
No.
Isn't it?
Oh, no, it's just everybody's different.
Like, the murderers are always well known, but then the victims just sometimes become completely anonymous. It's just another number.
I know.
So you're right to do that. Yeah, it's more about, the story behind the victim and remembering them, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which is nice. That's what you want to be like.
Yeah. Oh, no, everybody's different. Everybody likes different things. That's just for me.
Well, yeah, that's very true. What a world it would be if we were all the same.
Exactly.
Although we could do with a few more nice people and not someone like Jason Downey, I tell you.
Oh, God, I'm dreading it. And he's the Scottish one as well. He's from Kilmarnock, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's from Kilmarnock. And the reason that I kind of chose this is because... So my podcast partner, my better half, Marty, is Australian. So we kind of try and cover cases from Scotland and also Australia. So I thought this one would be really nice because although the murderer is actually from Kilmarnock, he emigrated with his family to Australia. So the murders actually took place in Australia. So yeah, it's a bit of a combination of both, but it's not a nice story.
Oh, God, stop saying that.
Not a nice story.
You're making me dread it.
I'm just putting it out there.
Do we need a trigger warning?
This is the trigger warning. Okay. If you're not interested in murders, you probably shouldn't be listening to a podcast that's called Scottish Murders. Right. Okay. Are we ready?
We are ready.
Okay, so I'm taking you first of all to the town of Kilmarnock, as you said. So Kilmarnock is in East Ayrshire in Scotland. So it's about an hour or so southeast of Glasgow. And I'd say it's kind of like a little town. It used to be like a sort of mining community, so it's not doing the best, I guess. But this is where Jason Downey was born in 1992.
A recent one.
Yeah, so he's quite young. Yeah, I mean, I still think of that as quite young. Jason had an older brother, Jamie, and a sister, but his dad wasn't around. I couldn't really find anything about what happened to his dad. So he didn't really have like a father figure in his early life, at least. And then we skip forward to 2006. So this was when Jason was about 14 years old. And he, along with his mother, Lorna, and brother, moved over to Australia. And they moved to the town of Gapunda, which I have never heard of before.
Did you have to ask Marty for a pronunciation? Or
do you know what? I didn't actually ask Marty how to pronounce it, so I could be saying it completely wrong. Gapunda.
Sounds right. Sounds
that sounds
good.
Like it's right.
Sounds Australian.
Doesn't it? I'm so sorry to Australian listeners if that's completely wrong, but I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
Do you think it sounds okay?
I think, yeah.
Gapunda is about an hour north of Adelaide. It's quite a small town, so there's only about 3,000 inhabitants. And again, it was like a mining town as well. Apparently, it's the oldest mining town in Australia, but more recently, it's become more of a kind of tourist destination. So it's part of like a wine growing region. So I think it's probably quite nice. And I know they've got mining museum and things like that. So it's a bit of a kind of touristy place to go to now, but it seems to be like quite a nice little town. There wasn't a huge amount of information about Jason's early years in Scotland, but since he moved to Australia, he was described as, and these are not nice things to be described as, socially awkward by people who knew him in Kapunda. He was quite skinny and kind of small and awkward, but bizarrely, he was also quite confident with that, so like a bit of a contradiction. So he used to be quite vocal on social media. I don't know if vocal's the right adjective, actually, on social media. Active, yeah? That's probably better. So he used to do lots of posts and he would say how athletic he was and he would tell people that he had a girlfriend and, yeah, just kind of confident in that way. But then in person, like, people would describe him as being quite sort of awkward.
Okay.
So bit of a funny one, I would say. In Kapunda, he worked as a mechanic. He didn't have any criminal record. There wasn't any, like, he wasn't associated with any crimes or anything. He was just thought of as a bit of an awkward person, and he wasn't particularly popular. Mm. So that was the lovely Jason, who doesn't sound great. But moving on to the Rowe family, they sounded like they were absolutely lovely.
How did she get mixed up with him?
Well, I know. Well, the thing is that it's kind of, oh, it's just so sad because, well, we can talk about it later, but she kind of knew him through her boyfriend, so it wasn't like sort of direct, and she just seemed to be like lovely and kind.
I thought he was the boyfriend.
No.
Oh.
He was like friends with her boyfriend, and she just seemed to be like nice. And this is the thing with a lot of these cases. We're kind of taught to be like nice and friendly and accommodating all the time. And sometimes we should just say, like, do you know what? Just bugger off. Just leave me alone.
Yeah. You get that as you get older, I think, don't you? I used to be quite like that when I was younger. Now I'm not. I would say bugger off now.
Would you? Would you? I think I'm still a bit too polite.
No, I'm not anymore. That time has gone. Yeah. It's past.
It's you've been there and done that, and it's like, well, maybe. I mean, she was pretty young at the time.
You know.
So the Rowe family.
Oh, how old was she? Oh, sorry, carry on, right. I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, that's okay. This is absolutely fine. This is what Marty's like. She was only 16 at the time.
No.
There you go. So the Rowe family were parents Andrew and Rose. So Andrew and Rose were married in the early 80s, and then their son Christopher was born in 1987. And then they had their daughter, Chantelle, who was born in 1994, which I just think is so young. But I suppose that's not,
what's my
that's
sister's,
not that young anymore. She's,
no, my sister was born in 92, so I don't know, what's that? What old is she? 32. Still quite young.
Exactly. It's like 30s now. Well, I suppose that is.
It's a long time ago.
I know. That doesn't feel like...
It doesn't, no, does
1994
it?
1994 seems so young, but no, that is, they're in their 30s, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
It's just because we're getting older, isn't it?
I know, it's gone so quick.
It has. I'm still stuck in the 90s, though. I love the 90s.
I loved it back in the 90s. Well, I don't know, not being a teenager, though, because that was a nightmare. I think now I'd like to be in the 90s at my age. That would be fun.
Yeah. What was your favourite decade of your life, would you say?
I think, weirdly enough, I think it's the 80s, but I wasn't born until 78, so that's a bit weird. But I love all the 80s music and the 80s things, so yeah. I don't know, I think I've always been a little bit out of sync, because I think I should have been born earlier. What about you?
I love, like, the 1960s and all the music and the fashion and that kind of thing. But having said that, I like being in my 40s. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think you sort of know who you are and you're confident enough until you're a wee bit older.
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, I think if I could go, like you say, you could go back to the 80s and be now, and I would go back to the 1960s now. We'd have a whale of a time.
We would, but not so much. If we could go back with all the knowledge we have.
I know. Although, to be honest, I'm so dependent on Google.
Are you?
I don't know how I would survive.
Yeah, how would we how did we manage?
No, just books. You would just have to go to the library.
The library. What's that?
Research things there. Yeah.
I know. You'd have to be social, wouldn't you? This makes you, being on the internet makes you so unsociable, doesn't it?
Do you think so?
Don't need to see people. It makes me unsociable.
I suppose so. You'd have to see people in person, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You have to talk to people.
Yeah, no. God help us. How would we manage?
And we are knocking Jason, we're being awkward.
I know.
We had to go and do it, it would be the same.
Socially awkward. Oh, terribly. I'm so socially awkward. But then I'm not evil at the same time. No. I don't think I would be doing what Jason's been doing. Yes,
well, I hope
nice
not.
Social awkward. Right, okay, so where did we get to? So Chantelle was born in 1994, so she was about 2 years younger than Jason Downey. So the family were well known in Kapunda, they were very well liked, and they were known as being sociable and warm. Andrew had his own carpet cleaning business in the town, and I think they were from that area, so they were kind of, yeah, they were just part of the community, all well liked, just seemed like really kind, decent people, and yeah, just a lovely family. In 2010, Christopher moved out of the family home, but he didn't move far away and he remained close to his family. So I think he was just like a few streets away and yeah, regularly would go and see them. So it's all looking quite nice at the moment, and unfortunately that's not to continue. So in November 2010, so that would have been, I guess, coming up to the summer in Australia, in November time, starting to get warm.
Okay.
Chantelle was 16 years old at this point. She was really popular at school. She had lots of friends. She was described as being outgoing and caring. Her aunt actually said of her that she would get upset if people at school were being bullied. So she would get upset for the person that was being bullied. And I just thought, oh, that's lovely. She just sounds like a really kind, yeah, empathetic person.
Yeah.
So Chantelle at the time had a boyfriend called Dylan Pratt, and he was good friends with Jason Downey. I don't know why they were good friends. I don't know what the connection was.
You knew I was going to ask that.
Yeah, I know. I tried to find out, but there just wasn't anything. I guess they were the sort of same age, and given it was quite a small town, I suppose they kind of moved in the same circles or something. Anyway, Jason and Dylan were friends, and because of that, Jason and Chantelle also became friends. And it started off fine, quite innocent, they were just friends, but Jason then began to become quite obsessed about Chantelle.
Right.
It sounded, as I said, like Chantelle was just really kind and didn't sort of say, leave me alone, to Jason. She didn't lead him on in any way, but I guess she didn't want to seem like she was rude to her boyfriend's friend.
And what about the boyfriend then? Did he do anything, or was he just letting that, whatever he was doing, carry on?
People thought of him as being kind of harmless because he was kind of skinny and he was a bit awkward, and people didn't really take him seriously, so they didn't think of him like as a threat. So I think they kind of just brushed off as him being, I don't know, just like harmless. Neither of them sort of said, can you stop it, or like did anything about it.
Okay.
Which is kind of sad, but I can totally understand.
Yeah,
that
it's your friend. Yeah,
and you don't expect people to have bad intentions. So he started like showing these kind of infatuation and stalking behaviors, which again they kind of just sort of, I guess they just sort of ignored it, really. Okay, so night of Sunday the 7th of November 2010. So Chantelle hadn't been feeling very well on the Sunday. The night before that, so the 6th of November, Chantelle had invited a few people over for a small party. Her parents had been away, and I don't think it was rowdy or anything, but she wasn't feeling great on the Sunday night. The following day, then, the Sunday, her parents came back, so Andrew and Rose came back, and because Chantelle wasn't feeling very well, they just decided to go to bed as usual. Andrew at the time was only 45 and Rose was only 44, so they're all super young. Normally, Dylan, so Chantelle's boyfriend, would have been staying, but he didn't that particular night because he knew that Chantelle wasn't feeling very well. And Christopher, who was 24 at the time, he was away on holiday. I think he was in the Gold Coast, so he wasn't around. So I'm not going to go into huge detail about the murders themselves because it was just awful, just brutal. Like, not sure what happened to Jason to be like so vicious in his attacks, but just awful. Suffice to say that on the night of the 7th, Jason went around to the Rowe family home after having a fight with his mum. He broke into the house and he was aware that Dylan wouldn't have been around because I think Dylan had said he wasn't going to see Chantelle that night. So he knew that they were kind of home alone. He brutally attacked Chantelle. Her parents then rushed in to try and defend her and were attacked themselves. Overall, Andrew, the dad, was stabbed 29 times and Rose 50 times, which is just, I mean, that's overkill. That's just absolutely horrendous.
And had he taken the knife with him? So he went there with intent, or did he? Was it from the home, do you know?
I'm not sure. That is a really good question, though. I don't know. I think it was like a combination of him having an argument with his mum and being kind of annoyed about that, and then the knowledge that like Dylan wasn't going to be at home, so I think he went around to do something, but whether it was actually to like murder them, I'm not sure. After both parents were murdered, so he hadn't actually killed Chantelle at the time, he then stabbed her around 33 times, so just horrendous. After the murders, Jason stayed in the house and tried to clean up the crime scene.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, so it seemed like, okay, there wasn't any kind of accident there. He's not going to be phoning 999 or whatever it is in Australia. I don't know what it is in Australia.
I don't know, actually. It's a good question.
I always like to know. You know, when you go on holiday, do you do this? When you go on holiday, you kind of think, I need to know the emergency number.
No, actually, Effie, I don't.
Do you know? Oh my god, I'm such a freak. Honestly, I always think that.
Maybe you've been
like,
doing your podcast
the emergency
too long.
Number in Spain? Oh, I think it's impacted on me so much. It really has.
Well, the emergency number in Australia is 000. So if you ever go there,
I'm going to write that down. Do you know what? Look at me writing that down. Like, the chances of me going to Australia are pretty slim, but now I know what the emergency number is.
Just in case. Might come in handy.
Just in case. Anyway, so back to this story. So Jason stayed in the house and he tried to clean up the scene. He actually even changed Chantelle into clean clothes because in addition to actually murdering her, he, like, did some awful things to her.
Oh, I was going to ask that. Do you think you went into the house that night to do that and then she maybe screamed and got the attention of the family and that's when he...
I think so. I doubt he went in thinking he was going to actually kill all three of them. But I think he probably went into some kind of rage. Obviously, this is just based on my no knowledge at all. But went into some kind of rage to get some kind of revenge, and it kind of went wrong, and all three people sadly ended up getting killed. So he changed Chantelle. He then also responded to one of Dylan's messages. So remember, Dylan was oblivious to any of this happening. He just knew that Chantelle wasn't feeling very well. So he had been texting Chantelle, asking how she's feeling, and Jason was responding to those messages, which is awful. He also tried to log on to her computer. I don't know why. I don't know what he was intending to do there. But he didn't do a very good job of it because he left blood everywhere. So there was blood on the computer and on her phone, and there was lots of evidence. After that, he left the Rowe family home and he went to work as usual.
How was he not covered in blood? Did he not go home and change? How?
I don't know. He had injuries on his hands, so they must have tried to defend themselves, and he told his colleagues that he'd just fallen off his bike. So yeah, because there must have been blood on him as well. So
there must have been blood everywhere.
Yeah,
that's
There would have been. Yeah, there would have been lots of blood everywhere.
It must have gone home or what? I don't know.
It didn't say that he went home, but yeah, he maybe did, because it just said that his colleagues had asked about all these injuries on him, and he said that he fell off his bike. So the police investigation, to be honest, I think this was quite an easy one for them because he did a really bad job of like...
What did he do? Sorry, just because I'm nosy. He was a mechanic? Was he a mechanic?
Yes, he was a mechanic.
So what was he doing working at night time? Or was it just because it was morning by the time he...
It was morning because I think he stayed in the house for quite a long time, which again is horrendous. Like, why would you? So I think he stayed overnight and then he went to work in the morning.
I just had to get it clear in my head, you know. I like to know these things.
Yeah. No, they're good questions.
But yeah, he made it easy for them.
So the Rowe family were found the following day on Monday the 8th of November, and police immediately started an investigation. Neighbours had apparently heard screams in the night and loud noises, but they didn't decide to call the police, which again is just one of those things like, why would you not do that if you're hearing like screaming? But I guess people just think the best, and yeah, they didn't alert the police. So as I say, Jason left quite a lot of evidence behind, so nothing was missing, so it was apparent that it wasn't like a break-in. They found fingerprints. Semen was found on Chantelle's body. But because Jason didn't have any prior records, there wasn't a match at that time with their DNA records. And then there was also a digital camera that was found at the home. So this was Chantelle's camera. And in one of the photographs, I think this is really random, Chantelle can be seen holding a flash drive. So you know the little flash drives that you used to plug into your computer?
Mm-hmm.
And the police then were able to find that same flash drive at Jason Downey's house, which I just think, that's mental. The chances of a photo being taken with you holding a flash drive and then later when they searched his house, them actually finding that is just incredible.
Oh, so he took the flash drive?
Yeah, so he took the flash drive. Okay. So you're right, he must have gone back to his own house.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah.
That's God. That was some diligent work there, going through all that and clicking.
I know exactly, going through all the photos.
Why would they have gone to look in Jason's house though?
Well, I think, sorry, just to also say that they found blood from Andrew and Rose in Jason's car. So he must have got into his car after and then spread the blood there. So the reason that they spoke to Jason was that they interviewed all the contacts in the Rowe family. So just as their standard investigation. But when they spoke to him, they found him quite bizarre. Some of his responses were a bit strange. So for example, when they were just going through the kind of routine interview questions, he provided a detailed alibi without like prompting, without saying. And he also said that he hadn't been invited to the Saturday night party, which was quite a strange thing to sort of bring up without even being prompted. So I think they were a bit like, he's a bit strange, he's a bit odd.
So he hadn't been invited, he was left out.
So he hadn't been invited. So do you remember I said that there was a party on the Saturday night where there was a few people invited? So he had said to the police that he hadn't been invited to that party. So I don't know, maybe if he was a bit annoyed about that as well. But just quite strange to like be mentioning these things as part of like a police investigation.
Yeah.
In addition to that, the police noticed the cuts on his hands. So they thought, okay, this is a bit of a strange one. Let's get like a DNA sample. And Jason gave it to them voluntarily, which is good. And of course, the DNA matched what was found at the crime scene. And Jason was consequently arrested, which is brilliant. Great.
Oh, is there a but coming there?
I don't think so.
Oh,
I think
you were saying it's great, but...
I know, normally there is a but, isn't there, when the police are involved? That's terrible. I shouldn't say that. I think they got him... They found lots of forensic evidence, so I think, you know, it was kind of a done deal. At first, Jason, however, pleaded his innocence, and he came up with this bizarre story about how he had gone to the house... And he had actually seen an unidentified man carrying a green plastic bag attack the family and that Chantelle died in his arms. Oh, so wow. That's how, like, the contamination took place.
All right.
But it's just, that's just absolute nonsense. Like, he still didn't call the police after all that happened. Yeah. He just left them.
Yeah, rubbish.
So fast forward to almost a year to the day later. So November the 9th, 2011, Jason eventually pleads guilty and he was sentenced to life imprisonment with a possibility of parole after 35 years, having got his sentence slightly reduced because he actually admitted his guilt.
I hate when they do that.
He only did it, I think, just to get that possibility of parole.
Still a long time, but...
It is. I don't know what it's... Sometimes in the UK, you look at their sentence and you think they've only got, like, 15 yep. years or something like that, and you just are like, it's yep. unbelievable. Mm-hmm. In America, I know it's much more strict, and obviously they've got the death penalty. I don't know what it's like in Australia. I think they're slightly more lenient, but 35 years is quite a long time, mm-hmm. I would say. But obviously he's killed three people.
Yeah, he's still going to come out a youngish person.
Yeah. So after his conviction, when he's in jail, he does write an apology letter, and he does express his remorse. But he still didn't really explain why he did it. It seems like he just got into a rage because he had had this fight with his mum. He was jealous. He hadn't even been invited to the party and he was obsessed with Chantelle. But there was no clear explanation of what happened. And yeah, just awful. And then there's a couple of other like little points that I wanted to just flag up as well. Christopher was the older brother, do you remember? And he's really close to his family. Mm-hmm. And at the time he was away and on holiday, having a lovely time. And he actually found out about the murder when he saw it on a news feature on the TV, which is just horrendous. I think it had said the location of it. And then he was like, oh my God, tried to contact his family. And then he found out that it was actually his family. Just awful. And then the other thing which I thought was horrendous was that there was like a news story done on the murder and Jason is in the background laying flowers for the family. And I just think, how can you do that? How can you do that?
So when was he doing that?
So that was just after the murder and the police investigations were gone. So it was like a kind of media... It was like a media report and he's in the background laying flowers. Just awful. Yeah. Awful, awful.
Oh, boy.
So that is the case of the Rowe family. And it's incredibly sad. And, I mean, I guess they did get justice in that Jason was sent to prison. But no explanation as to why he did it. And just so sad because Chantelle had only ever been kind to him and hadn't led him on at all. So
yeah. And Dylan as well, her boyfriend, must have been feeling pretty rotten that his friend.
I know, absolutely terrible because he's introduced mm-hmm. them, exactly.
But like you say, you wouldn't know to, if your friend's acting a bit strange, you wouldn't know that that was what it was going to lead to.
Well, I think because he was a bit awkward anyway, I think they probably thought, well, it's just Jason, you know.
It's just Jason. You hear that all the time. People get passes, don't they? Ugh, it's just such
I know, they're just a bit like that. Yeah, and then we always just assume that people are harmless. Especially with him, I think, because he's... I don't know if you've looked up images of him, but he does just look like... He's just quite small and not really, like... You wouldn't imagine being intimidated by him, really. So yeah, it's a very, very sad story. I hope the family and the community as well can, I don't know, get over it and not... How do you not be, like, affected too much by something like that? I don't know. It must just be horrendous. It's like a nightmare. Just absolutely horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Somebody in your midst, isn't it? It's always horrible when it's the community like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, but at least they caught him quite quick and, the finger wasn't pointed at anybody else.
Exactly. Thankfully, he didn't seem to be that smart and he missed a lot of evidence, which is good. Yes.
I'm going to be able to clean up all that amount of blood. It must have been bad.
I know, it must have been horrendous. Mm-hmm. It must have been awful.
But sad for Christopher.
I know. Mm-hmm. Absolutely horrendous. And being like so helpless, being so far away. Just awful.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
What a shock.
Yeah.
Oh, Effie, that was an awful sad story.
I know, I told you it was awful.
And I'm devastated that the murderer is Scottish.
I know.
Had to be Scottish, didn't
I know. We pride ourselves in being, like, kind of welcoming and friendly, but there's always some weirdo, messed up person, and there is quite a lot of them in Scotland, as we know, because we're covering lots of cases. What has been your favourite case to cover, do you think, Dawn? Is that too difficult to answer?
No, my favourite, the one that's always stuck with me, was A Miscarriage of Justice.
Okay.
I don't know, that's always stuck with me. It was Stuart Gayer.
Okay.
And he was just such a lovely, you know, unassuming person, just wanted to go on with his life, and he just was, well, he got put to prison, and then just as it was all, well, I won't tell you the ending, but that one stuck with me.
Yeah, because not only somebody being killed, but then the wrong person's
Yeah, and they never did. That family never got justice because they went after the wrong... Well, they were determined this person, Stuart, was going to be put to prison, and they weren't looking at anybody else, and he didn't do it.
Oh, God.
So that I don't like that.
No, of course not. That's terrible.
Because that could happen to anybody. That's what's so scary about that. You could be wrong place, wrong time.
I mean, I like to think that things are a bit better these days, and there isn't so much bias, and like when the police are investigating these cases, that they'll look at everybody, hopefully.
For that episode, I talked to the Miscarriage of Justice organisation in Scotland.
Did
and you would have thought that after they had covered so many, you know, helped so many people that had been put in prison wrongly, that they would be a bit jaded, but they still believed that the system could be fixed, it could work, it could be right.
Okay.
So that was quite nice to know that it wasn't just, they weren't down on it. It was quite refreshing.
Yeah, that's good. That is good.
Yeah, so that was it. What about you? What's been your one that stuck with you from what you've done?
I mean, it's horrible to say favourite because it's like, they're awful. But the ones that I like investigating, I guess, are the sort of older cases. I find it easier to do like historical ones because it's just, I think it's so upsetting sometimes when it's more recent and it feels kind of more real. I like doing the local ones as well. So I suppose like the World's End murders, I like doing the research for that as horrible as, because that was just awful, awful as well. But it was because it was in Edinburgh and you kind of know the area, and I like it when there's lots of information about the victims as well and what they're like you were saying earlier. Because some of the, I don't know how you do some of your podcasts, because sometimes there's hardly any information at all.
I know.
It must be so difficult.
Well, there was one I did, I released just on YouTube just the other day. It was 7 minutes long because there was nothing. But I could just think it's nice to put wee small ones out there now and again because they still were murdered.
Yeah.
It's still happened.
You're still putting it out there and you're letting their memory not be forgotten, which is good.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I wanted to ask one more thing because myself and Marty are going along to CrimeCon Glasgow.
Yes.
And I believe you are as well.
We're going as well, yes.
Yay!
We'll be there.
So have you been to it before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went last year.
And what was it like?
Did I go last year? No, I think I went the year before. I was ill last year. It was really good. It's more, it's a smaller event than London. It's more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather than being sort of two or three tracks, if you like, you know, you can see two or three things at the same time. It's just one track and we're all in it together. You know, we have lunch together, we see the same things together.
Nice.
People come see the content creators together. It's nice. It's it's a lot smaller and it's nice.
I'm really excited.
There's not a lot of us coming this year. I think there's only about eight down so far. So it'll be lovely.
It'll be great. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to go and listen to the guests as well.
I know. Yeah, that's always quite tough. Sometimes you get family members coming and talking.
Okay.
So that's quite tough sometimes. Raw.
I can imagine, yeah.
Listen, thanks so much for coming on and telling us that story. It's been really interesting. Can you tell everybody where they can find you, your podcast?
Okay, so if you want to come and listen to us, we would love, love, love that. So we are Mums, Mysteries and Murders, and you can find us on all the usual places that you get your podcasts. And we've also got an Instagram? No, we don't have an Instagram account. That sounds horrendous. We've got an Instagram account. No cams here. An Instagram account, and it's Mums, Mysteries and Murders as well. But yeah, if you want to come along to CrimeCon and actually meet us in person, then that would be amazing.
That would be good. It'll be a good day.
But thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, that was great. It's really nice to meet you at last.
And you. It's lovely to meet you too.
Scottish Murders is a production of Clurentorn.